Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. You know, people have asked me, where do I go? Not exactly that way. But where do I go with my dog when it's very, very hot outside? I have a solution for that, and also concerns about poisons. We might not think about things that are toxic to pets. We'll talk with a veterinary toxicologist. Jennifer Zamek is the shelter manager at Harmony House Cat Shelter in Chicago on the North Side. It's been there a long time, yet a lot of people don't know about it, so you will know about it after this conversation. And why this facility is so important for Chicago. I was just at Harmony House, as you know, Jennifer. I came to celebrate the life of Ann Dieter, which you were doing. Ann has passed away, and she was your longtime president of your board, who is so significant having anything to do with animal welfare, specifically cats in Chicago, for many years. I know that I led several different task forces for the city over the years, and she was always there volunteering and always there contributing in a very positive way. Not here's what we can't do, but here's what we can do. And that's what Anne was all about. And she will be so sorely missed. So the good news is it got me over to Harmony House, where I admit I hadn't been for several years. Tell me about Harmony House.
We've been in existence since 1970. Our current location, we moved in 2012. So we've been here about 12 years now. It's primarily cageless. We do have cages for new kitties, sick kitties, kitties recovering from surgery, all that type of stuff. And if they don't get adopted, they live here for the rest of their lives.
What is the history? Because Treehouse Humane Society, which is further north than you are, that's in Rogers Park, they have been around since, I think, 1970-ish, somewhere in there. They were one of the only cat-only shelters in the United States at the time. They might have been the first, maybe the second or third. What's the history where you guys said, hey, we're going to open another animal shelter in Chicago, and we are only going to be about cats?
So we started out as a fostering place, and we only had foster homes for a while. And then a donor died and left us enough money to buy our first building, which was at Southport and Wrightwood. Mm-hmm. The building itself is no longer there. But once the building became, you know, needed more repairs than we could handle, that was when the property values were rising in that neighborhood. So that building was sold, and we were able to buy our building that used to be on Kedzie Avenue and make it cat proof. It had washable walls. We had linoleum on the floors. We washed the surfaces every day and did loads of laundry, all that lovely stuff. And then a wonderful patron bought in 2010 bought us this land and built us this building, and we moved the cats in June of 2012.
And the building is where at, for people who don't know?
We're at 2914 North Elston Avenue in Avondale.
Mm-hmm. And you have an event coming up in Avondale, which we'll get to in just a couple of minutes. So being cat only, I was going to say, what's the difference between that and a shelter that also has dogs? Well, you don't have dogs. But why? What is the focus? Where being cat only, I don't even know how to put this exactly into words, but it seems to me that you have a very specific niche, and it's a necessary niche, incidentally, in Chicago. Can you talk about what I'm trying to get at?
I can try.
I bet you will.
Cats. Personally, it's easier for me. With the staff, it's easier. Cats are easier than dogs in some senses, and harder than dogs to take care of in some senses. The cats do well here because it's a quiet environment. There's no dogs barking, and that helps with the cats calming down and adjusting. I'm not quite sure what you're getting at.
No, you partially are answering it. And the other thing that's interesting is that at one point, a couple things, at one point in time, it was thought, and it's still thought by many, that cats are solitary and they need to be kept in a space where it's one cat in one cage kind of thing. And in fact, adoptions actually go up when cats are with other cats. Now, the trick is choosing which cats go with other cats. However, if you can do that, and shelters clearly who do this have a knack for it, then the cats do tend to come out of their shell more quickly.
Yes. While they're isolated, that's when we get to know their personalities. And each room here, because we have a bunch of different rooms, each room is chosen. The cats are chosen by their personality rather than their age or their activity level. And we kind of match the personalities with the cats in that room. And then they either come out of their shell. And if for some reason they don't adjust to that room, we try a different room. That's the nice thing about having the rooms that we have. We have different personalities. We can mix and match because sometimes we get it wrong. Other times most of the time we're right, but there are times when the cat just isn't happy in that room, but is much happier in another room. And then, it makes it easier to see their person, like once their personalities come shining through, when we have adopters in, we ask them what they're looking for. If they're looking for a companion cat, we ask what their cat is like so that we can match their personality with a cat that might get along with their cat. And we kind of play matchmaker in that sense.
Well, you do. You're like a dating app for cats. And, people think about this in terms of dogs. You know, I want a big dog or I want a small dog or I want that breed or I want that breed. Or maybe I like a dog that's a certain color or maybe I like a dog. And the other thing that's talked about a lot, and it should be, is matching the right lifestyle of a family with that dog. So if a dog is like always active and always wants to play as opposed to a dog that maybe an older dog or maybe of a personality type that isn't quite that way, maybe is more shy, maybe an older couple would be better to adopt that dog, for example. People don't talk about all this with cats, but they should because they have personalities that are just as distinct and as individual as every dog's personality is distinct and individual. And to me, it's a mistake that any cat is the same as every other cat and any cat can fit into any home. Can you comment on that?
That's true because we have cats that we know dislike children. We had a cat years ago that we would have to put in an isolation space if there were toddlers because he would never hurt them, but he would stalk them and act like, he would do the butt wiggle like he was going to pounce on them. So we learned really quick. Hojo had to go into a room and, be isolated while there were toddlers around because he just, I don't know what he thought about them, but he wanted to pounce on them. So that in that case, we knew he wouldn't be good with kids. He ended up going home to a nice woman who adores him, and he's doing great. But we do have cats. We match it with the personality of the people too. It's and their lifestyle, like you said. We don't want to. If they want an active cat, we're not going to send an older kitty that just wants to be petted to a home that wants, something more active. Or if they have an active cat, we don't want to send something that isn't going to get along with that active cat, that's going to be annoyed by that active cat. So we really quiz the people when they come in. We have a application online that we do that touches on what they want. So we know what they're kind of looking for. So we know where to start with, but then we go further when they get here, because we can talk in depth with them about what they want and what they're looking for.
Harmony House for Cats. That's the name of the shelter at 2914 North Elston Avenue. We're talking with Jennifer Zamek, and we'll be back talking more about what I think a perfect match can be that isn't talked about enough in the dog world, but especially not in the cat world. and a special event you have coming up that involves liquor. So I'm all about it. Next. Jennifer Zamek is here. She is the shelter manager for Harmony House for Cats on Elston Avenue. To be specific, 2914 North Elston Avenue. So as it happens, I'm on the advisory board for the Gray Muzzle Organization, which is a nonprofit that raises money to offer grants to shelters to support specifically the dogs with the gray muzzle, the older dogs. I don't know of any such organization for cats, but I do know this, that many, if not most shelter animals, are over 6 or 7 years old, and many of those are far older. They're senior citizens. Why do you think so many older cats land in shelters?
Some people, once they get past the kitten stage, they no longer want them. We've seen that before.
Oh,
we get them when individuals pass away. We in addition to accepting from the public, we do transfer out of animal care and control, and we will on occasion take the ones that have been brought in to be euthanized because their person passed away and nobody in the family wants them, and they're perfectly healthy. So they go up for adoption, or we take them because they're perfectly healthy, great cats. We have adopters come in that are specifically looking for older cats to adopt, maybe because they're older or because they like that personality and they know that they get often overlooked past kittens or young active cats. I love them all.
To me, everything you said is gold. So kittens are a lot of fun. There's no question about that. But there are also some work involved in having a kitten.
They're a lot of work.
Yeah.
They're a lot of work. With an older cat, here we get to know their personality. And that's, for the most part, that doesn't change. Kittens change. Kittens can be sweet in one thing, and then, you know, something may happen or just something triggers them and they turn into little demons for a little while we, you know, while we behaviorally work out that little whatever's going on. But yeah, with the adults, it's really nice because once we get to know their personalities, it's, if somebody comes in looking for a specific thing, we might have that cat with that personality, and that's the cat they choose because, you know, it's exactly what they wanted. That's happened quite a few times recently. So it's been nice. We've gotten a lot of older kitties adopted out.
And you just touched on this a little bit, but I'm a huge fan of adopting older animals, not necessarily geriatric, although maybe, but older animals into homes, dogs or cats, into homes where there are senior citizens. I think there are just so many advantages to that. What do you think?
I agree. It's good for both the cat and the human. They give each other support. They cheer, you know, the cat will cheer up the person if they're depressed. You know, cats are an amazing comfort. And the older humans and the older cats seem to really form a bond.
Absolutely true. I want you to know, friends, about this facility. If you love cats, it's important. And you mentioned, Jennifer, pulling from Animal Care and Control, which means Animal Care and Control, it's not their fault. People scream about animal control. If they get too many animals in because people are relinquishing those animals by law, and it's a good thing, they must take in those animals. No question, no choice about that, right? So now they have more cats than they have space for, or dogs for that matter. And you're one of the increasingly many facilities that, as I say, and as you said, pull from Animal Care and Control to make space for others. And you can adopt out that animal who perhaps has been languishing at Animal Control for some time.
Correct. Yeah. We started that in 2019. We joined the Homeward Bound group of shelters that do pull from them. And when we can, we will pull from them. Or if they have a specific cat that they think would do great here, the APs may give us a call and say, hey, I've got this cat. I think it's something you guys can take care of. Would you consider taking it? And we do.
Which is great. I only have 2 minutes here, but I do want to talk about the kitty crawl coming up. Katrick, tell me about that. Yep. It's September 28th. Tell me more.
It's from noon to 5 p.m. It starts here at Harmony House. If it's nice, we're in the courtyard. We have some food. We have some surprises. We have music by a local band called Motivikin. And the pub crawl, we go to four places in the neighborhood. There's drink specials and food specials at each place, and raffles and games and a lot of surprises. Each participant gets a t-shirt, a pub crawl t-shirt with a swag bag full of goodies. It's a lot of fun. It's our third annual one, and it sells out pretty quick. And tickets go on sale through our website and our Facebook page.
Okay, so tickets are on sale, and it's hh4cats.org. hhforcats.org. How much are those tickets?
$45.
All right. Seems to be a good bargain to me. You get drinks and you get food, and it's for $45. Yep. But the most important thing is that it supports, you're a nonprofit, of course, and it supports what you do. And I would assume this is one of your major fundraisers.
Yes, it is. It is.
Yeah. So this is a good thing. And also, you could check out some pretty cool places in Avondale. I like that as well, because I was reading about the bars and restaurants you go to, and they're not necessarily places, unless you live in the community, that you'd know about. So that, for me, is fun. I always like checking out new places. September 28th, beginning at noon, so pace yourselves if you do this. From noon until 5 p.m., hh4cats.org. Thank you so very much, Jennifer Zamek from Harmony House for Cats. Thank you, Jennifer.
Thanks for having me.
Next week on the show, we talk about what's happening September 28th, among other things. That's the world's largest pet walk. It's sponsored by Pet Partners. You can learn more about that at petpartners.org. Pet Partners is the largest certification program in the country, maybe the world, I don't know, when it comes to animal-assisted activities. So those are dogs and cats and sometimes guinea pigs, miniature horses that go into everywhere from nursing facilities to hospitals to libraries, you know, for reading programs, and the list goes on. We'll talk with Annie Peters about that, and we'll also talk about the Chicago Herpetological Society. What is that? They rescue reptiles and amphibians as well and help people to better understand what these animals are really about and what their needs are. There's nothing wrong with having a pet snake or a pet lizard of some kind. However, you have to know what you're doing. We'll talk about that next week. Kim Theobald is the owner of Bosley's Backyard on the north side in the Ravenswood neighborhood in Chicago. Hey, Kim.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Explain or describe what this indoor-only facility for dogs and people to be with their dogs is for.
Yeah, so, you know, it's all inspired by Bosley. I started the business, had the idea for about nine years, because after bringing her to the dog park when she was a pup, always kind of amounted into fights and drama, and it just wasn't a great environment for her. I always would say to myself, I just wish I had a safe and stress-free place where I could just, you know, pop in with her and not have to worry about other dogs or anything else. And, you know, she could get that daily exercise that she needs, as a 70-pound dog with a lot of energy. So, the whole concept and the, you know, primary or majority of the service that we offer is having this private space for you and your dog. So no other dogs around. And there's a lot of equipment that's physically stimulating as well as cognitive stimulating. And so it's really to remove all the stress and triggers that, you know, can happen in the outside world, and just be present with your dog and not have to worry about anything and work on that, you know, bond and communication and get them the exercise that they need.
So there's a couple of issues, you know, dog parks, and I helped establish the rules for dog parks in Chicago. Having said that, We have a 16-year-old dog. She doesn't want to go to the dog park, and I respect that. You know, she's okay with other dogs. Is she going to play? No. Is she going to have a really good time or any good time at all there? In fact, she'll have a bad time. So why would I bring her there? Or there are other dogs who might not be as dog friendly. So you can't trust that dog around other dogs. Or some people have dogs that seem to be pariah dogs. They get picked on all the time. And it's difficult to explain why, but it's much easier to say, you know what? I'll go somewhere else where my dog can get exercise, get mental and physical stimulation. And maybe, I assume it's okay, Kim, if people bring, let's say I want to come, my dog's aggressive to other dogs, but it has a couple of dog friends that they are around all the time. And that's okay, I assume, as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think to that point, too, you know, that's exactly it, is that, you know, putting dogs together and the stranger dogs together that don't know each other when you walk in the dog park is kind of setting them up to fail. I mean, it takes a long time for most dogs to acclimate with another dog and lots of introductions. So like you said, of having a friend or a buddy that they play with regularly could be fine, but dogs they don't know isn't fine. So yeah, we do buddy passes. So you can add a buddy pass, which includes additional two dogs onto your reservation. So you could have a group of three. And then we also do dog parties, again, with, you know, dogs that know each other. And if you're celebrating, you know, a gotcha day or a birthday, you want to celebrate your dog's birthday, we allow a little bit more on that because it's a longer reservation. But yeah, it's exactly to that point. It's just walking into a dog park, your dog doesn't know these other dogs. It doesn't always go well.
And it's not only a dog park necessarily. It could be doggy daycare, which, again, for the right dog and the right daycare facility can be a great experience, but it always isn't the right dog, and maybe you can't find the right facility for you.
Yeah, and to that, it's funny that you say, you know, your dog's 16 and Bosley's 13 now, and she, you know, is kind of starting to slow down or get a little bit actually scared outside. Her hearing has changed, and I'm just so grateful. Like, I bring her in there and she zooms, you know, and she's 13 years old and she'll, you know, just have the time of her life. So it really is just, you know, taking out all that stress and triggers and things that can really like stress your dog out, you know, outside and in a urban setting with a lot of other dogs and people and noises, you know, and just removing all that so you guys can have a good time and have fun.
And you're air conditioned, I assume, right?
Yeah, yes. It's very cool in there.
And Chicago is not air conditioned. So for a lot of dogs, this can be an opportunity to run around in a cooler atmosphere, a more comfortable atmosphere, whether it be a French bulldog that definitely should not be running around, even if it's a young Frenchie, outside if it's 90 degrees out. On the other hand, in air conditioning, completely different story.
Yeah, definitely. It's temperature controlled, so for those hot summer days, it's great. And for those really cold winter days, it's nice and warm. So, yeah, don't have to worry about the weather as well.
What motivated you to do this? Do you have a history with dog training or some such thing?
Yeah, well, my background more is in dog rescue. So, you know, I always had this challenge as a dog parent. And then when I started to really get involved in rescue, I realized I wasn't the only one that, you know, had this challenge. And, you know, kind of realized to me, like, why are we forcing our dogs into situations that are stressful for them and just set them up for failure? Like, why don't we create an environment that works for them? So, yeah, it was really through, you know, all my work in rescue that I learned so much more about dog behavior and, you know, just opened my eyes that I wasn't the only one with this challenge. So yeah, that's really my background. Is I've done a lot of work in fundraising and volunteering with our local dog rescues.
Yeah, I've got nothing against dog parks per se, but I think that I really don't. But I think that a lot of people aren't aware or don't want to admit to themselves that their dog isn't really having a great time at the dog park. Do you think is that your experience as well?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you never kind of know what you're getting into when you walk into a dog park. And you know, like you said, your dog might be stressed out. They could be the one that gets picked on. You know, your dog might be just more anxious and it's just really stressful for them. So the dog parks, you know, it's really the only outlet that you have when you live in the city and you don't have a yard. And it's just not worth the risk to go to other parks that aren't fenced in, and you let your dog off leash and who knows, you know, what can happen there. And there's also, you know, that problem too of people doing that and their dog, you know, isn't necessarily friendly or shouldn't be off leash and running up to other dogs, you know, that need their space. So, yeah, it's just really trying to solve a problem of, just, you know, being responsible for your dog, giving your dog, you know, a happy, fun time and yourself and not having to worry about anything.
It seems you'd be the perfect facility. And I know you have a dog trainer you work with. Years ago, I set up, and now others are doing it. I'd argue I was one of the first, but I set up a protocol for teaching senior dogs, having a senior dog class. And I don't know anyone that's doing that in the Chicago area. I'm sure there are probably some. You know, the idea for these is just to go somewhere with that older dog and have a good time, have two or three other or four other older dogs there. You're doing things like looking for different, or the dog is doing things like looking for different scents, interacting with the people. It's just enriching to be out in an environment, if all the dogs are friendly, with other dogs. All of that really is great, I think. And just movement alone, because these dogs are probably arthritic. Hopefully you're doing something for the arthritis, and there are lots of choices out there for people, things that we can do for dogs with arthritis. But one is simply movement. And those dogs tend to just want to be lazy dogs, you know, and sleep all day and all that. That's actually not a healthy thing. And it's better, they're going to sleep more, understood. But it's better that they also get out, but they need to do so in a safe environment and also one that isn't, frankly, too hot.
Yeah. To your point, I always say movement is medicine. So, you know, yeah, it just like us, our dogs need motivation and need, you know, a coach to get moving. So, it's really good, you know, just to get out and, you know, even if they're walking around playing, you know, they don't have to be the high jumpers or, you know, going through the hoop or anything like that. But just, you know, going to a new environment, stimulating them and getting them some of that exercise, really, you know, 20, 30 minutes is all they need a day to stay healthy.
Mm-hmm. Do you have dog classes that you do offer?
Yeah. You're talking about, you know, a little bit of scent work. So we do nose work classes. We've been doing that for a few years since we opened.
Explain what that is, Kim, because some people may not know, and I'm such a fan of nose work.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's basically scent detection. So similarly to, you know, how canine dogs that work for the police force train, it's just a natural instinct that your dog has. So it's actually one sport. I always say that actually your dog is in the lead. You know, you're not really training them or teaching them anything. You kind of let them go and they know what they're looking for. And it's just really amazing to see their brains work, in that function. And it's for any dog, any age, any size, any breed. Every dog can be successful at nose work, and it's really stimulating for them, for, you know, cognitively stimulating. It's a class of six dogs, and kind of each dog has its own little nook. And then our trainer, Janice Tripteau, she sets up a different search area, different searches every class. Uses boxes sometimes, uses different areas of facility. Sometimes she'll do it outside. And each dog goes up one at a time and does their turn to search. So there really is no off-leash, any off-leash dog interaction. It's another great way to bond with your dog and confidence building, you know, when they find it and you're rewarding them. It's really great, you know, for their confidence as well.
Absolutely. And, I mean, dogs were born to do this, no matter what kind of dog it is. If they're a dog, they're born to do this. And Janice, incidentally, is one of Chicago's best. Again, where are you? What's your website so people can learn more, including some special events that you periodically have as well?
Yes, we have lots of fun events and markets and fundraising events. We are in Ravenswood at 4011 North Ravenswood, just north of Irving Park Road. And there's free parking right outside on Ravenswood.
What?
So tons of free parking, which is, unheard of in the city. So I've never have a hard time finding parking over by us, which is great. Our website is bosleysbackyard.com. That's BOSLYS backyard.com. So you can learn more there. You can book your appointment. We make it really easy. You just choose your duration, choose how many dogs you're bringing. And you can just book online. You don't have to have a membership or anything like that. So I make it really easy. And we're open 7 days a week.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much, Kim. And, you know, free parking. I'll be there just for the parking. Thank you, Kim.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks so much for having me.
Senior veterinary toxicologist at the Pet Poison Helpline, Dr. Renee Schmidt, is a veterinary toxicologist. So that is, we know there are veterinary cardiologists, veterinary neurologists, veterinary oncologists. And you are the same thing. You're a specialty.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm a veterinarian who specializes in anything that can poison a pet.
Yeah. Well, that's, and it turns out to be, you now have to be an expert on plants. You now have to be a nutrition expert pretty much, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. We have to know the bad things that these animals can consume, whether they're food, plants, medications, you name it.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to talk about foods. I think a lot of people know about chocolate. But you and I were chatting beforehand, and you said, you know what? That gets more hits on our website, you said, than anything else. So people don't know as much as we thought, maybe.
Yeah, I think so. And I think what is confusing is that chocolate isn't just chocolate. There's a lot of different types of chocolate. When we think about the unsweetened, the baker's chocolate, that's a much higher concern than the milk chocolate or a white chocolate would. And so I think a lot of people are curious to know, depending on what their pet got into, if it's going to be problematic or not.
And how do you know? So if the pet gets into dark chocolate, I'll use it as an example. How much dark chocolate are we calling the veterinarian for? Or do we just say, okay, I'm going to wait and see?
Yeah, for sure. And I would say that if you had an average size 20-pound dog and they got into dark chocolate, just the standard dark chocolate that's about 2 Hershey Kisses worth, probably not going to be a big issue. However, if you have a smaller pet, that could be very detrimental. And then if you think about the baker's chocolate and the unsweetened chocolate, it has a much higher theobromine content, and that's the area of concern that we have. And so one Hershey Kiss, milk chocolate Hershey Kiss, is usually not going to be problematic to any animal, but potentially that exact same size in an unsweetened or baker's chocolate could be very detrimental to that small pet.
You know, something people may not ask you about, but I'm about to, is what that product is wrapped in, whether it be chocolate or anything else. So I'm thinking the Hershey Kisses have that aluminum wrapping, and I'm thinking all this other, it could be candy, and it's not necessarily the candy or any food product, it's what it's wrapped inside.
Yeah, you got it. So if they're ingesting the wrappers, it really is going to depend on the size of the pet. So if they were to get a wrapper or two of a Hershey Kiss, likely to pass through okay. If it's a Labrador who eats the entire bowl of Halloween candy, then
that's possible.
Then that's possible for sure. Then they can have a harder time passing that through. And sometimes we have to have the veterinarians induce vomiting in those guys to try and get that out.
Okay. So I want to talk about xylitol. What did he say? So first of all, what is xylitol?
Yeah, xylitol is a sugar alcohol, so it's a sugar substitute.
A what?
Sugar alcohol. So it's a sugar substitute. And it's something that's in a lot of different products that are used for sweetening. It's got a great sweetening power. It's also great for fighting cavities. So you'll see it in a lot of gums and candies. You'll see it in toothpastes and mouthwashes.
But things like brownie mixes even.
Absolutely.
And such. So now you've got chocolate and you've got xylitol, and you're about to explain xylitol can be the worst thing.
Yeah, for sure. So we see this most commonly in dogs. We don't believe it's an issue in cats. And xylitol can cause a drop in blood sugar, which can then result in tremors and seizures to occur. And in high enough amounts, it can actually cause liver failure. And in humans, it has such great health benefits for it. And so a lot of people are choosing xylitol over sugar.
Very quickly, you don't think about some things like nuts being a problem, however.
You bet. Macadamia nuts. I get really concerned with macadamia nuts. We don't know why, but they can cause joint pain. They can cause difficulty walking and tremors in dogs. They can also cause pancreatitis because of that high fat content.
And dogs could die of pancreatitis. Raisins, grapes?
Yeah, raisins and grapes, we can see kidney failure developing in them. And we don't really have a good idea to set a quote toxic dose or in a safe amount. And we find that some animals are more sensitive than others are.
And the curious thing is, you know, dogs are so much like us in so many ways. We can eat a box of raisins or two or three or four, and there's really, as far as I know, no effect. Not true for dogs.
Yeah, and not true for dogs. And it would be surprising if we could figure out what it was that causes it specifically and why that difference is between humans and animals.
How do people reach you?
They can reach us at petpoisonhelpline.com or 1-800-213-6680.
Dr. Schmidt, thank you.
Thank you.
The American Association of Feline Practitioners every now and again bring experts together to create guidelines for anything and everything that is all about cats. And this one you might be interested in. It seems that most people with a cat don't have a cat. They have 2.3 cats on average. Do the cats always get along with one another? Often they do, often they don't. So how do you help these cats to get along? There are new guidelines from the American Association of Feline Practitioners written for you, the 2024 AFP Inter-Cat Tension Guidelines, Recognition, Prevention, and Management. And this is so incredibly useful. It includes videos, management tools, and really what's maybe most important, how to bring those cats together in the first place to potentially, or more likely, set yourself up for success. To learn about this and to read it through, it's all free, catvets.com. Catvets.com. Talk to you next week, bright and early on WGN.